Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity, episode 340. I'm your host, John Reardon, back after a week off last week, where, if you haven't heard it, Alex, Matt, and Joe filled in and did a lovely job. But this week, we're back. I've got Neil with me.
Hi, I'm back.
And we've also couldn't quite get rid of Matt, so Matt's still here.
We had to hold him to the wall for his sins against Virtuos.
I'm not the one that said anything bad about Virtuos.
No, it's more, I was thinking about, as I was listening to you guys talk about, Virtuos, credit where credit's due, had the fantastic near port that will be out on Switch. You can see our Matt's 10 out of 10 review of very, very good Switch port up on
NintendoReport.com.
But I it was the kind of thing I was listening to it. I wanted to like just yell and be like, guys, this is why it's like this. But like, so Virtuos definitely had, they have XCOM 2 on their record as far as porting to Switch.
XCOM 2 and Outer Worlds are, I think, kind of the big ones.
They did Outer Worlds too?
Yeah.
But it's worth pointing out that with a lot of these Switch port houses, if they are given enough money, they can usually make the thing look very good. If they aren't, the game's probably going to look bad.
Money and time.
And I do think it's the kind of thing where, like, yes, like if a company never, if a port house never makes something good or something promising, then you could write them off. But if they've got a few scuffs on their record, it's probably that 2K was like, hey, we're going to give you $20. If you could port XCOM 2 to Switch.
Well, and Virtuos, they also did L.A. Noir, which was a great on Switch.
Yeah.
They did the Switch version of Starlink, which is the best version of that game and does look very nice on Switch.
Oh, they did do Starlink. Yeah, Starlink is a great port.
They also did, I believe they did the Switch versions of Spyro Reignited. They did Dead by Daylight, which is an incredible port on Switch.
It's one of the better ones.
I don't like the game, but I think it's a good port.
In fairness, Dead by Daylight is just kind of a janky mess of a game.
I said Dead by Daylight. I meant, what did I mean?
What did you mean?
I think I meant a different game.
I just took your word for it. I trusted you.
I do, and it's like Panic Button, which has done a lot of good port. I didn't realize they did the Subnautica port. I just brought up their list because I know that
Virtuos did Subnautica?
No, Panic Button did. But I wanted to point out is that everybody views Panic Button as like the Switch gods. They did Doom after all. But they also did that. Like, I reviewed Hob, the Definitive Edition, and Torchlight 2. Those ports were not great. And I think we might have had an interview with Panic Button, or whether this is on the record, off the record, I honestly don't remember. That is where I first was kind of, it was brought to my attention, the idea that, like, oh, when Panic Button was given the money by Bethesda and probably Nintendo to make Doom look very good on Switch, they could do that. When they weren't given as much, you know, money, time, resources to make Hob and Torchlight 2 ported to Switch, those were subpar results. It kind of is a little bit where, like, you don't totally want to damn the port house when the publisher is probably more to blame.
I was thinking of Dying Light, not Dead by Daylight, by the way. That is the game that Virtuos ported to Switch, and it's a very good port.
Yeah, that one I've never played. Before Nier, the only Virtuos ports that I had played were Starlink and XCOM. And
yeah.
Alex is the one that immediately came out the gate to say something bad about XCOM, and I didn't have anything else really to contribute there.
I know Alex also does not like their port of Dark Souls for Switch.
Well, I think the audio for that is kind of rough.
It has sound compression, which is more an issue of somebody wanted to fit that game on a Switch cartridge and didn't want to pay up for a bigger size.
Yeah,
there's nothing in the port that's wrong there. That's just they needed to compress it. But yeah, and then
I saw someone in our YouTube comments was like, oh, yeah, sound is what you have to worry about with a Virtuos port. And it's like, it was one time.
Well, and like Witcher 3 had compressed sound. I don't remember anybody complaining about that.
Witcher 3 was internal at CD Projekt Red, right?
Witcher 3 was Saber Interactive.
Oh, okay.
Yep. It was the same studio that was working on the next-gen versions of Witcher 3 for Series X and PS5, but it was their Russian studio, and CD Projekt Red just sort of went, nope, after certain events occurred earlier this year.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your history for it. Also the Switch versions of BioShock are totally fine. There was some debate on whether those were good on the episode too. They're fine. Okay. With that out of the way, now that we've corrected all of the grievous errors from
everything
last
else
week's
was
episode,
objectively correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Especially the Splatoon part.
I didn't even get that far.
you guys just dunked on Splatoon, didn't you? That was you guys started talking about Splatoon and then I had to get ready for this episode.
Oh, neither of you got that far. Okay, cool.
The closest I got to hearing anything about Splatoon 3 this past week was trying to start Overwatch 2 and not making it past the title screen.
My thing is, I probably agree with you guys on Splatoon 3 because I don't think it's bad. It just, it exists. And the Splatfest, I was like, I should play the Splatfest. And then I heard everybody complaining about the Trinity battles or whatever. And I'm like, maybe I won't.
Well, the part that I got pushed back on last week that I guess you haven't heard yet is that I said I would have legitimately preferred Splatoon 3 released exactly as it is in 2018. And then the next year we got Splatoon 4, because by now we'd be at Splatoon 6, which would actually be a game worth buying for $60.
So let's get on with the actual topics of the episode. We're going to start today with some listener mail, because we have kind of a bigger one that feeds into some news that's going on. So I believe this was from Chariot Goblin. I closed out of the actual email.
I'm like 90% sure it's Chariot Goblin.
Okay, we're going to say it's Chariot Goblin.
You read it, and I will correct you.
Hey, Connectivity. Nintendo announced the date for the first teaser of the upcoming Illumination Super Mario Bros. Movie. Sony just showed a teaser for The Last of Us TV show. And the Sonic the Hedgehog movies are actually pretty good. I think it's pretty clear that video game TV and movie adaptations are here to stay. What are your thoughts on video game companies venturing into TV and film? I've seen a lot of pushback, especially from Nintendo fans, on video game companies focusing on anything outside of gaming. After the Mario movie, which Nintendo IP do you think is next for a TV or movie adaptation? Thanks, and keep on keeping on.
It was from Chariot Goblin. And, and Donkey Kong, 100% Donkey Kong is next.
So before we get too far, that trailer will be out by the time this episode is out. So please enjoy us getting anything we think about that trailer wrong from here on out. Just know that we recorded this like the night before.
Before we hyper focus on Mario, I do actually kind of like have a comment on the overall trend of like movies and TV, and like whether we're kind of getting into that period of time where we're going to see more of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a very interesting data point in Cyberpunk 2077, because the anime series based on that just released on Netflix a couple weeks ago. And it was a highly acclaimed anime series made by Studio Trigger, who's very, very beloved. They've made a lot of stuff that people like a lot. So the anime was very good. And then Cyberpunk had its highest play count on Steam since launch the very next week.
Well, here's a few more data points related to that. When the Witcher TV show launched, I believe Witcher 3 sales spiked significantly. So CD Projekt Red, pretty good at this.
It's nice that CD Projekt Red decided to like fund their own TV show this time. Like, the best thing about the Witcher one was it was a TV series that wasn't based on the Witcher games. Like, it was based on the books that The Witcher was based off of.
Yeah. And they reaped all the benefits.
And then, like, it had no, like, CD Projekt Red had no money in it. Like, they just were there making sales off of somebody else's shit, which is beautiful.
A point that one of my friends brought up is when it comes to the upcoming Last of Us HBO show. Mm-hmm. We just had the remake of Last of Us 1. And like all of us,
why
they
did that? It's very smart business wise.
Yeah, all of us who are gaming enthusiasts look at that and we'd be like, why on earth would we buy that? But in 6 months, there's going to be a brand new HBO series, and more casual fans are going to be interested in buying some Last of Us games. And I think that this trend of good adaptations lead to sales of the video games is going to get publishers and IP holders paying more attention to, hey, can we make a good adaptation out of this?
It's also a proven strategy for books as well. Like, it's the kind of thing where you look at Game of Thrones, where it's not like George R. R. Martin was in squalor with those book sales before the show came out, but that definitely took that book series from a certain place and made it like almost part of the overall pop culture canon because of that show. And even, why do you think, as cynical as it is, with what Sony's doing with all their remakes, and there's the I don't think it was 100% confirmed, but like it seems like it's going to happen where they're doing some sort of remake of Horizon Zero Dawn. What are they doing for Horizon Zero Dawn? I believe they're making a TV show for it. So it would make sense that if you're going to have a TV show based on Horizon Zero Dawn, you make sure that there is a Horizon Zero Dawn remake coming out a little bit before that TV show.
There's also a Nier anime. I just remembered a Nier Automata anime is about to air.
It's all part of the plan.
I do have a question for you. So this kind of feeds into the Last of Us thing. I mean, cards on the table. I don't like the Last of Us games. I have very little I have very little interest in the show.
But
if you
do this show together, why do you think we're Xbox owners?
If you're excited for the Last of Us show, like, more power to you. That's totally fine.
If you love the games, that's great, man.
But from what I've seen of the trailer, and having only played the first Last of Us game, and I've seen a lot of people throwing comparisons up online, the show seems like it's flaunting accuracy to the games. Like, a lot of shots that they've shown us are like you can find that shot in the game. They're very specifically casting the character. Like, it seems very intentionally like we're trying to be accurate. And I feel like on the completely opposite side of the coin, or maybe even like a different coin a little farther down the road, you have the Halo show, which is famously totally not the same plot as the games in any way.
I still need to watch that.
You should.
I would probably like it. Everything I've heard about it is it seems kind of fun.
And I'm kind of just imagining from the perspective of somebody who hasn't played these games and is watching these shows. Because you brought up, you know, watching Last of Us and then buying this new remaster. Would you rather watch a show of a game and go, oh, I want to play that game, and have the game be the exact same plot as the show you just watched? Or would you rather it be something like Halo, where it's like a different interpretation of that universe?
I enjoyed the first Last of Us. I never played the sequel. I really want to say that you're right, but the live action Lion King made $1 billion.
Yeah.
I'm not saying which one is financially right. I'm saying, like, for you personally, which would you prefer?
I think I'd rather have the Halo version. Quite frankly,
it's especially egregious with Last of Us, because Last of Us is basically just a long form movie as it is.
Yeah.
But
some interaction, some shooty shoot.
But like, I agree with you that I find it difficult to be like, yeah, I see myself enjoying what is more or less the same exact experience, but I look at the market and I'm not sure most people feel that way.
Yes, I think, well, and it's kind of only like, so I enjoyed the Halo show from the perspective of, I know, like, I played these games, like, I know this world's story. Now you're giving me a different version of it, and that's interesting to me, because if I wanted that same exact plot, I would just go play the games again.
Go on.
The Cyberpunk anime, I think, has my favorite version of this, where it is firmly set within the game's canon, but it's a totally unrelated story. Different characters, has nothing to do with the plot of the game, but it's still the world. And I think that's the version I prefer the most, where it's still firmly the stuff that I recognize, but it's also something totally new.
Like, so Witcher, if you've read the Witcher books and then you watch the Witcher show, by the time you get to the second season of that show, they're pretty off the rails. Like, they're hitting kind of the major outline points for that show as far as the books go, but it's a different plot. Like, characters are dead in the show that, like, make it through all of the books. Like, we're way off from what the books are doing in that show. And I've heard comparatively little complaints about that as compared to, say, Halo. And I think that you can get away with it because people don't read. like everybody, like a lot of people have, even if you're like not a super Halo fan, you've probably played some Halo with friends at some point. You probably have some basic understanding of the plot. Yeah. Where the majority of people's experience with The Witcher is the games, which are also not the plot of the books. They're sequels to them. So it's this weird thing with video games where I feel like they're kind of held to a different standard as far as adaptations go. We expect them to be worse and yet also demand that they be 100% accurate to their source material, even when that isn't appropriate for the medium, which is, yeah, it's just a weird comparison point as far as like that as compared to books or something like that.
I, unironically, this is going to sound like a weird nerd tangent. Unironically, I kind of blame anime because so many anime adaptations are adaptations of manga. Yeah. And a lot of popular, but in my opinion, not very good adaptations of good manga will just take the exact comic book panels from the manga and recreate them to the point that, like, in the middle of a fight scene, you'll like take these, you'll have these awkward pauses on specific poses that don't flow with the action well, because
just
that's
to
where
hit the frame.
Yeah, that's where the panel was. And that is exactly what anime fans want. They want it frame for frame, exactly what happens in the manga. And I think there's enough overlap between gamers, capital G gamers, and anime fans that that mentality is there.
Yeah. Well, and it is, there is a certain difference, like with video games or like with manga, where it's like, I've seen this scene. Like, I'll know if you get it wrong because I've seen it.
Yeah.
Whereas in a book, you're imagined, like, there's, you have a greater part in creating that scene. And so it feels
there
more like
more
your opinion.
Abstraction.
Yeah, exactly.
In like taking, you know, text instead of, you know, images.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is, I mean, just, it's, when it comes down to just adaptations in general, and it's, I forget where, like, I, there's like someone online that I saw kind of make this point about like how they feel about adaptations. But I look at specifically, I mean, I think like comic books, you know, what we've seen Marvel do, mm-hmm. where they are adapting a lot of comic book stories. Usually, sometimes it's a little bit more identical than others. Other times they go off script. I mean, it is kind of funny if you look at like something like Captain America Civil War in the movie. Is like it does not follow anything really related to the Civil War comic series, other than like Iron Man and Captain America are fighting and Spider-Man joining Iron Man's side is an important plot point. Like, that's basically it.
It could have stood to have significantly more in common with the comic book series. Yeah,
I kind of agree. And I enjoyed Civil War, the movie, but definitely the comic book series made more sense when it came to why they were fighting. Mm-hmm. But when I look at adaptations, and it's something that I kind of am keeping in mind as we are building up for the trailer reveal of the Super Mario Brothers movie and just that movie coming out in April, I want to see the thing adapted for the medium. I don't want to just see what I've seen, whether it's, you know, read in a book or, you know, read in a comic, played in a video game. Like, if you were going to take something, even Sonic the Hedgehog into film, which I think that the Sonic movies, both of them are fun. Somehow, like the Sonic the Hedgehog movies, despite I think being very discordant from Sonic the character throughout video games and you know, comic books and you know, all sorts of animation and stuff.
That's like, kind of why. Like, they're just close enough.
Yeah.
Like, they're not like, subservient.
Especially the second one, when you start seeing Tails and Knuckles and, you know, Jim Carrey as Eggman starts to lean more into, you know, the video game caricature of it all. Like, it really works for me, even if there's bafflingly a 10-minute scene partway through the movie where it's just a spurned bride and her sister attacking a bunch of gun agents.
Also a weird Russian dance off in the woods.
Yeah.
Which just kind of works, even if it's like, I'm looking at this, I'm like, this is a video game movie somehow.
No, that was the entire time we were watching that, and it got to like some of like the Knuckles flashbacks to like his tribe and all that stuff. And I commented to my wife, I'm like, you know, weirdly, this part is probably the most accurate part of this movie in terms of like what happened in the games, like as opposed like everything else is happening, this weird shit here, this is this is not that far off.
Well, the funny part is that the games don't go anywhere near that nowadays because of a certain litigious comic book writer.
Yes. And my point of reference is mostly Sonic Adventure, because that's where a lot of that started to crop up in the games.
But yeah, I mean, when it comes to adaptations, like, adapt. Like, I'm not expecting the Mario movie to be, you know, my exact ideal of, like, oh, it's Super Mario 3D World, but now he's Chris Pratt's voice. Like, no, like, make something entertaining. And, like, it is, you know, there's been a lot of discussion, as you know, you will have all seen the trailer by the time you hear this. But I don't have, like, complete faith in Illumination, but, like, they have made solid movies. And I feel like the comparison that I settled on with this is, you look at how Next Level Games and Retro Studios never made a game outside of Nintendo.
They tried.
But Next Level Games and Left Field Productions and Monster Games, how when they don't work with Nintendo, their games are, you know, maybe okay, maybe bad. But then they work with Nintendo and then you get some bangers. So that's kind of my hope, is that Illumination, I think, like, you know, some of their movies are good, some of them are okay, some of them are maybe kind of bad. But maybe working with Nintendo will, you know, manage to create some kind of weird Mario movie that works. Or it'll be an abomination. Either way, I'm going to have a good time.
This movie has had an incredibly long development cycle for an Illumination movie, which kind of, I don't know if that's a good sign or not.
It's kind of had an incredibly long development cycle just for movies in general.
Like, right, but especially, Illumination is famous for their turnaround. This has been in development for a long time.
I want to say some of the Minions movies were in development. Like, I'd have to double check exact timelines, but this is definitely long. I don't know if it's, like, absurdly long.
It's long for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do like, I did find out that the directors are responsible for Teen Titans Go.
Okay.
That's a good movie.
Yeah. Well, both I believe they are co-creators on the show itself. And then, like, I think one of them's the director and one of them was, like, a co-writer on the movie, which was a totally fine movie. Like,
good.
If that kind of maybe not totally goofy in the way that Teen Titans is, but if they can take that kind of attitude and blend it with Mario, like, I'm really on board.
Yeah. I've seen very few Illumination movies. Like, I think I've seen one ever, but so I can't say genuinely I have any real opinion on the movie yet. I'm sure once the trailer comes out and everyone's listening to this on Friday, you can go over to Twitter and see what I do think. But right now, it's like, there's just not enough about this movie that we know to have an opinion about it. And I think a lot of people are trying very hard to have that opinion already, even though it doesn't make sense.
All we know is that they nerfed Mario's butt, which is weirdly a thing that Nintendo does on loves nerfing butts.
It's what they do.
Arguably, the entirety of Xenoblade 3 was just the butt nerf for Xenoblade 2.
It is also evident that a lot of, you know, I mean, it was, you could kind of guess this beforehand, that the Universal Super Nintendo world definitely seems like something that, like, the play is getting that movie out there and having it tie in, like, basically if this movie is successful, I think it'll probably drive a lot more people to go to those parks once they're open.
Just based on the poster, visually, it seems to draw similarly from...
Oh, yeah. It looks exactly like the park.
Yeah, 3D World had an insanely impactful effect on the look of Mario, which is weird to me. But I suppose it is just like it's a very nice 3D interpretation of, like, the new Super Mario Bros. Look. So I guess it makes sense.
Yeah. Mm. And I think when you look at other 3D interpretations of Mario since 3D World, like, I love Odyssey, but Odyssey's definitely, like, a little too out there for, like, if you were to do, like, we're going to make the Mario animated movie, like, you're not going to be like, and we're going to send him to New Donk City.
Well, in Odyssey, it's like, nail down the art style of Odyssey, because it's, it's difficult, because it really does feel like almost every world you go to is kind of from a different game.
Yeah, and 3D World is very consistent.
And frankly, that could work for a movie if you want to play into it, but not right out of the gate for the first one.
Yeah.
So the other thing that we have seen, possibly, we'll know by the time this goes up, there was a leak of Mario's face.
Yeah, I think from a McDonald's
employee. And honestly, like, it looks right. Like, it looks like Mario as made by Illumination.
Yep.
It looks fine. I don't know. I'm a Sonic fan. I don't understand how you could look at this and really be that upset.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It looks different. It look like, if people want to be like, oh, it looks a little off, like, no, like, it does not look like Mario in Mario Odyssey. It looks
right.
Like,
it's not his character Mario model the from Illumination. The games.
Yeah. He does look like a Chris Pratt character.
Yeah.
He looks friendly and happy. So I came to this realization. Once again, this is 3D Worlds, though it might be Galaxy's fault. I don't remember when this started. At some point in the Mario timeline, Mario's arms got significantly longer. It was either Galaxy or 3D World. I want to say it was
Sunshine.
Sunshine, he was just ripped. But he had normal length arms. I think it was 3D World. He got really long arms. And so I saw Mario in this, and I feel like his arms are too short. Because ever since they gave him long arms, they've kind of kept on model with that. And now I just can't accept this tiny armed man. And
it's very disconcerting. You need to make a video comparing the length of Mario's arms.
Honestly, you could download the 3D models.
Do it.
And find the length. That would be fun.
Let me look at this gallery of official artwork of Mario.
I don't know if you can see it as well in the fit. Like, you got to look at the character model. Like, that's where it's the most obvious.
I'll look at that gallery instead.
Yeah.
There's like four different galleries of just what Mario looks like in the Mario Wiki.
3D World is where it feels most egregious to me, but I'm pretty sure he still has pretty long arms in Odyssey.
I think he does. I haven't thought about this before, but thinking about it now,
this is all I think about, Neil, is the length of Mario's arms and how much it
keeps
bothers
you up
me
at night.
Yeah.
So other adaptations, like I mean, by the fact that Donkey Kong and Cranky Kong are both casted in this movie, voiced by Seth Rogen and Fred Armisen, respectively, and the fact that Super Nintendo World's expansion in Japan is supposedly a Donkey Kong themed area. Like, oh, sure. I think Donkey Kong's being set up for either a movie or a TV show or something.
That would be weird, because we've had a CG Donkey Kong show before.
We have, yeah.
That means there's a lot to live up to.
Yeah, and like,
Diddy Kong
musical,
is anti-vax, so... Look,
will we find out if this is a musical tomorrow? I know that was going around.
Well, the rumor was that was from the leak where, like, the test audience hated it.
The co-director also has, like, written a lot of songs for Teen Titans, so...
Because I would love if this was a musical.
Yeah.
So much. That would be incredible.
I mean, get Bowser to sing. It's Jack Black, man. It'll be great.
Yeah.
New Tenacious D song.
Get Donkey Kong to sing. He's already done it.
Yeah.
Sing about the crystal coconut.
God, it's so good.
So I guess outside of kind of what is either known or in the pretty heavily rumored sphere when it comes to Donkey Kong, what other Nintendo IP would you like to see turned into a TV or movie, and what do you think is realistic?
Like, as a spinoff of Mario, or just like anything?
Just in general, because it does, I mean, we have Nintendo Pictures is apparently a thing, and this does seem like their big IP move is taking things cross media into movies and TV.
So I do think an easy candidate is Zelda, because not only is it one of the biggest brands that they have, but it also kind of fits in really well with, like, kind of what I said earlier, where it's like you make a thing that is like recognizably the same world, but a totally new story. That's kind of all Zelda is. It's the same three characters over and over again in totally different stories. So you can make an original movie. And as long as it's got Link, Zelda, and Ganondorf, that's Zelda. That's what it is.
And we know that's been on the table before, because wasn't there I think there were confirmed rumors that confirmed stuff that, like, I think was it Nintendo talking to Netflix about it or something like that? And there was a leak that then Nintendo got scared off.
I think Zelda it'll be interesting to see how this goes with Mario, because I feel like Zelda even more so has the problem of adapting a silent protagonist into a lead character.
Yeah.
In a movie where they cannot be that, probably. And so, like, anytime you do that with a silent protagonist, like, whatever your interpretation is of that character into the movie is going to not line up with the majority of your fans, no matter how good it is. Like, everybody has their own interpretation of how Link sounds and how he acts, because he's you. And Link has that problem even more so than Mario. So It'll be interesting to see how it goes with Mario, because I agree with you that Zelda's kind of the obvious one, but Link is a much more, I think Link is a much more challenging character to adapt into.
They have been kind of making Link more of a defined character recently, though.
That's the thing. Named Link in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, which... it's not like he has dialogue.
Breath of the Wild, like, canonically explains why he doesn't speak and gives him a personality reason for it.
Yeah.
Giving an in-game excuse for you to be quiet is not necessarily the same as having a developed character.
I would say the way they do it with Link is a little more developed, because specifically in Breath of the Wild, it's because he comes from a relatively mundane background, and now he's at the center of these events that the entire kingdom is resting on. So he stays silent because he doesn't know how he can say something that lives up to his role in this.
That's a character trait that can work as a silent protagonist. You can't, like, that character trait doesn't work in a movie because the character to talk.
I know, it's just they are playing with the idea of Link being a character.
Yeah, I feel like they're more just hanging a lantern on the fact that he's not talking more than developing his character.
I think when it comes to Zelda 2, I don't know if I trust Nintendo to make it a good TV show or movie.
Okay, so Zelda, I would put in the same category. Like, I feel this way about, like, Metroid would be another one that I would love to see. But, like, I don't know how much I would want Nintendo directly involved in it.
Yeah, I think with Metroid and Zelda, there are interesting movies and shows you can tell with that. I don't think Nintendo is interested in making those movies and TV shows. So it is like Nintendo would need to give up the reins significantly, I think, for either of those to work well.
Probably, but it's the one that I see having the best shot, especially because, like, you can just make a totally new story because there's seven different characters named Link. There's seven different characters named Zelda. You can just make another one of each. And it's something that the series is already doing.
Do you think that I'm trying to think now of, like, of franchises where they do have, like, super developed characters that you could do? Do you think they'd ever license out a Xenoblade anime? Because there is a Xenosaga anime.
Or they should.
See, I was kind of thinking of, like, the story heavy ones, like Fire Emblem and Xenoblade. And I think those are a little tough because they're also anthology series. Like, my first thought was Fire Emblem, but, like, you can't do any particular Fire Emblem character without specifically doing their story that's already in the game. Because otherwise, like, what do you do with them? Like, why are you going to that character specifically?
I think Xenoblade is a bit more, I think you could, if you wanted to do an anime or a movie or a show or whatever of a specific game, I think Xenoblade works well for that. Like I think, you know, the first Xenoblade would make a fantastic anime series. But there's, I'll throw my Star Fox one in here, like Star Fox.
Kid Icarus,
yep. Those ones would work well as, like, the characters are almost, especially Kid Icarus, like, the character is almost more the thing than the plot is, which makes it easier to make a new plot with that character.
Star Fox, honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, would probably work.
Star Fox
well.
Would work because it's the characters, and you have a basic premise of we need to defeat that guy. But, like, your path to get there, you can do whatever you want along the way.
Yep.
And Kid Icarus, I think, has a lot. And even Kid Icarus, you even borderline don't really know who the bad guy is. Like, if you've played Kid Icarus Uprising past, like, chapter 5, then, like, you know, like, that's not a game about fighting Medusa, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
So that could go in a bunch of different places.
And also, Kid Icarus has become such a self-aware franchise, too, that, like, you could also just get weird with that one.
Yes, and that's... I would challenge any Kid Icarus movie or TV show, I think probably TV show, to get as weird as Uprising. Because, like, holy crap, that game goes places.
I'd also say Splatoon as an anime seems like a pretty good fit.
There is a Splatoon manga that's apparently really good.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
I knew there wasn't an anime, but I am not surprised that there's a manga.
There is an Animal Crossing anime.
So it's a film specifically.
Yes.
I've heard it's okay.
My wife watched it. I watched some of it. She said that it was like inoffensive.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't like exciting or anything, but it was like not terrible.
It's fine.
Yeah.
But I do like I think what Nintendo might do, like if we're looking like, you know, crystal ball of if this Mario movie hits well, is successful, what is their next step? I do think Zelda is something that is probably, I wouldn't be surprised if it's in talks as we speak, and maybe we'll hear about it. In Hollywood Reporter or Variety, we'll have a story on it next year.
Yeah, I do wonder if the mentality is we need to use our big IPs, Mario, Zelda, that stuff. Or is it like, are there IPs that people are nostalgic for that we've had trouble selling? Because that may also be an area where branching out into other mediums can be financially beneficial.
I almost brought up F-Zero as a joke, but...
Already done. I'd be happy for them to do it again.
But I do think after the Mario movie, like, I think Donkey Kong, I think you expand that world. You know, yeah. I mean, Mario Kart is technically their biggest IP. Like, there's a lot you could do in that world, in that space, whether it's other movies, whether it's, you know, streaming shows or you know, look at what Sega's doing with Sonic the Hedgehog. And I think that's something that you could probably adapt to doing with Mario as well.
Just don't put real people in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because, yeah, with Sonic 3 is a year and a half away from coming out. Is it the end of 2023 or the end of 2024? I forget.
In fairness, if they didn't have real humans that had no business being part of the story, it wouldn't be authentic to the Sonic games.
Right. Well, that's the thing is in Sonic, that's makes sense.
Yeah.
They also decided that Shadow is going to be the next movie, and you just can't do Shadow without gratuitous humans.
Yep.
That's just so core to his story.
I am so excited to see Shadow's backstory acted out in live action.
Yep.
I want to see Maria get shot on screen.
Maria die.
Yep.
the Sonic X anime actually went into that where like they hadn't like they tracked down the guy that was the soldier that shot her and like interviewed him and how like he has severe PTSD about it. I want that to be in Sonic 3.
That'll be after they finish the Knuckles show on Paramount Plus. They'll do the soldier who shot Maria, the special event movie.
It's a limited series.
But man, I won't lie. Like, I also do have a kid who will be like, likely the Mario movie will be the first movie he sees in theaters.
Yeah, your kid is the target audience.
Yeah, like I stand by the fact that I don't know if this movie's going to be good. I'm there for it either way because it's either going to be something that like will legitimately be enjoyable and delightful, or it'll be like such horrific garbage that I will just cackle as my child wants to watch it on loop because that's what children do.
Oh yeah,
there's like a minimum level of quality for it. I think that there's no way it's going below that.
I watched the original Mario movie on loop a lot as a kid. So
did I.
Yeah, I don't know what the bar of quality is, but it isn't high off the ground.
I am just begging them to just put the phrase "trust the fungus" into this movie just once.
I think there's the chance that it could happen. Like, and I know like people can be upset about like, oh, modern day references in movies. I want to make sure that all of my movies are timeless and don't show the age that they were made. People could be like that all they want. I think that's your decision. I might disagree sometimes. I think you can go overboard with it. But I do think you could do some really funny jokes in this movie. Like, just make reference to some, like, break the fourth wall a little bit. Like, just have fun with it. Like, not every joke needs to land 100%. Just do something original and enjoyable.
Have a dance scene set to Walk the Dinosaur.
Sure.
Maybe have Iggy Koopa start rapping in a deleted scene.
Inexplicably have two characters that have no ties to anything attack a hotel. Like I felt like I had an out-of-body experience the first time I watched Sonic 2 and got to that point where I'm like, what are we even like? Sonic hasn't talked for 15 minutes. Like it's just been this angry bride driving a golf cart at her secret agent husband.
Yeah, it sucks so much. I don't even think that they need to get rid of all the humans because I think that the way they're taking Sonic's character in those themselves. the way they're taking Sonic's character, like the whole idea of like the main couple being like parents to him, I think that works. That's good. Who are these other people?
Yeah.
Well, I think the real honest answer is that you can significantly increase the speed of production for those movies with more live action sequences that have no animated characters in them.
Probably.
Like it takes less time to film Cyclops being goofy than it does to actually like animate Sonic and Knuckles.
I did cackle when like they just like dropped like, oh yeah, we're with Gun. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so dumb.
And that's there because they had to set it up for Shadow.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but... rules.
God, I hope there's a bunch of scenes in the third one where like Sonic and Shadow are standing next to each other and the gun agents can't tell them apart.
Sonic Adventure 2 didn't even set up Gun. Like Gun first appeared in Sonic Adventure 2.
They set up Gun with a semi chasing you down a hill, and that's all the setup you need. that is the most iconic establishing shot in the history of video games.
Are they gonna start Sonic the Hedgehog 3 with City Escape? Because if they don't, I think I'm gonna proclaim it's terrible.
No. So they have to start it with Eggman releasing Shadow and then City Escape.
Okay.
I think you just cold open with Maria's death.
Yeah, probably.
Like fade up, a woman is shot.
Who
cut to black,
Gerald Robotnik?
Sonic 3 slowly fades up.
Who plays Gerald Robotnik in Sonic
Fred Armisen.
And Seth Rogen plays
Seth Rogen plays Shadow.
It'll be like the reverse, like Chris Pratt doing every voice. The power goes on to someone else in the Mario movie. Anya Taylor-Joy voices Amy Rose.
They haven't introduced her yet, have they?
No. I just want
Big Cat. I don't know if they will.
They can play a Uno reverse card and have what was his original girlfriend?
That was Princess Sally.
No,
only like in the comics.
His conceptual original
one,
Madonna. Oh,
yeah.
That's what they'll do. Give me that hedgehog on human woman.
No, we already
woman.
Did that. We're good.
That's like at the basis of Sonic's identity. Like we can't just be like, oh, Sonic 06 did that. Like we're like, no, that's what Sonic is about.
I would totally be fine if they did like a nightmare sequence with that or something.
That existed
and then, like,
before the game.
He wakes
did.
Up in a cold sweat.
That
Madonna
would be awesome.
Is more a part
yeah, and
of
it was,
Sonic
it was cut
than,
for a reason.
Than Knuckles. Because it was just too good.
Yeah, Sonic was also a rabbit at first. We've moved on.
Video games weren't capable of conveying that level of art at the time. We weren't ready. It's like how George Lucas had to wait for technology to catch up before he could make the prequels. Sonic had to wait for technology to catch up so they could have human woman on hedgehog action.
All right, so we're gonna see a trailer for Mario by the time you hear this. What is your guaranteed to not happen prediction for what's gonna be in that trailer?
Wait, am I supposed to think of something that absolutely isn't gonna happen, or am I making an honest guess?
I guess something. I mean, interpret it however you want. I'm gonna take it as something that I think would be cool if it happened, but I don't think will.
Okay.
Okay. Part of me does legitimately want to say Sonic's in it and we're leading up to an Avengers style Smash Brothers movie.
I would love that. Mostly because I want a multiverse thing where John Leguizamo's Luigi shows up and fights Charlie Day. my thing that won't happen but what would be cool is if at some point he has to get a jetpack and it's fluid.
Oh, here's what I actually want. Like, that's like kind of realistic, but also there's no way it's gonna happen. I want Luigi to have the electric powers that he does in the Mario and Luigi games. Because that was always like the coolest development that they went with for Luigi and then abandoned.
I hope there's a scene in the movie where Luigi like looks at a vacuum cleaner and there's like a Ghostbusters sting.
Well, it can be like the War Machine sequence in the original Iron Man, where it's just like next time. Yeah.
Yoshi in the post credits. Yoshi or Wario in the post credits. I can't. I don't know which one I want.
Outside of Trust the Fungus, the other line that I would want from the original Mario movie would just be Luigi insisting to Mario that nothing's impossible, improbable, unlikely, but never impossible. That should be the tagline of the film.
I just hope Leguizamo gets involved in some capacity.
He tweeted about it a while ago that he was not asked to be involved.
Cowards.
And then he sung the praises of the original Mario movie as being colorblind casting for casting him as Bob Hoskins' brother.
I don't know that much about him, but whenever he shows up, he's pretty funny.
He just seems odd, but yeah.
Yeah. He was in Encanto, so he's done some VO work recently.
It's true.
He's Bruno. We don't talk about him.
Yeah.
So, but, what else yeah. we got?
Did we answer that entire email? There was a lot there. I think we got to everything. But you guys have both had some fresh new gaming experiences. Neil has had more of them than Matt has. Matt has more just sort of touched some fresh new gaming experiences and kind of looked at them from
afar. Hey, I got some decent time into Vampire Survivor.
Okay. Nah, yeah, that's what I've not gotten into Vampire Survivor, but I know that's what everybody plays on Steam Deck.
Yeah, talk about your steaming piles of deck.
So yeah, I got my Steam Deck last week. Matt, yours what, literally yesterday?
Literally yesterday, yeah. I was going out to grab dinner before the stream that we had to cancel because everyone got motion sick looking at Sonic Chronicles. And I was thinking as I was opening the door, man, when is that? I'm wondering when that Steam Deck's going to get here. And then I open the door and I trip over the box.
Yeah, I will say give credit to Valve and that it was supposed to get to me on a Wednesday. It showed up on Monday. Like they had it's going to come on Wednesday, and all of a sudden it showed up on Monday. And when I found out that I dropped everything, I was like, oh, let's go. It's time to roll.
It took, I think, exactly a week for it to show up for me.
Yeah, that was the same for me. But good. I mean, now they did announce, Valve announced that I forget if it was sold or shipped a million, which it's funny because everybody's like, the Steam Deck's going to take down the Switch. It's like, yeah, man. Only 100 million plus to go to get you to Switch.
I think that there is a certain level of jank to the Steam Deck that I wouldn't have it any other way, because then it wouldn't be the portable PC that we want it to be.
Exactly.
But it also, it's never going to be mass market because of that jank.
Yeah, it's something that it's like, and we're coming at this little handheld. I mean, it's not little; it's huge. We're coming at this handheld device from different perspectives, and the fact that I am not really a PC gamer at all, whereas you dabble in it a hell of a lot more than I do.
I have a probably $2,000 PC by now. It is I'm kind of transitioning away from console into PC more than anything. So this is already a space that I was pretty familiar with.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, there's definitely a learning curve in that, I'm looking up a lot of tutorials of how to do crap. And it is funny. They have a good slew of games just confirmed to work on Steam Deck. There also are a lot that I think there's verified on Steam Deck, which means it's totally playable. And then there's playable on Steam Deck, which usually means that the text is very small, Deep Rock Galactic, which I've been getting back into on Steam Deck. The text is very tiny.
There are some games that they technically work, but you really don't want to. To bring up Sonic Adventure 2 again. Sonic Adventure 2, for some reason, cannot recognize that the Steam Deck has a controller. So you need to map the controller to the keyboard controls, and Sonic 3D Sonic games where you can only move in four directions don't work.
But there has been there's something exploring with some of the weirdness of the Steam Deck. Even Steam Next Fest is happening as we speak, where a bunch of demos are on Steam, and I downloaded a bunch of them, and some of the demos just straight up didn't work. And then when I mentioned that online, I had someone reply to me being if you do this and change a proton to experimental, then it'll probably work. And I'm like, yeah, man, it's just a demo. I'm not going through all that to play a game for 15 minutes.
And for what it's worth, some of the Steam Next Fest demos also just don't work on PC.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, there's definitely some jank across the board with it, but it's like, I kind of expect it going in. And I know that Steam does have a relatively lenient refund policy that seems pretty good for Steam Deck, and that, like, it's if a game that you don't know 100% if it's going to work on Steam Deck, you can kind of buy it and try it. And if it winds up not booting, you can refund it very quickly.
Yeah, Steam's refund policy is either 2 hours of gameplay or 2 weeks real time, and that is, and no questions asked. And that's pretty good.
Yeah, like I do think for shorter games it does suck. But like in my very specific case of like potentially buying some games on Steam Deck that are not 100% confirmed to work might require me to go look at ProtonDB and, you know, find out what I need to reboot it as, like run the game in or whatever. That's some of the quirky stuff that like I'm kind of getting used to. Right now I've been playing Final Fantasy VII Remake on it, which runs totally fine on Steam Deck. Going back to what y'all were saying last week about Square Enix PC ports usually being garbage, although I was not there day one for Final Fantasy VII Remake, although day one for that was earlier this year. That seems to run pretty well on Steam Deck. I'm legitimately impressed.
I did play that one relatively early, and it's gotten some fixes.
Okay.
It was a little rough. But it is kind of like impressive. Because the Steam Deck isn't that substantially more powerful than some of the consoles we're used to playing on recently, which makes it kind of impressive that it is able to play these games so well in a handheld format.
It might have even been Digital Foundry that made the comment where they compared it. They essentially said like the Steam Deck is to like Series X and PS5 kind of what the Switch is to Xbox One and PS4. Like it's better than the generation before it, so get it to run those games, but it's not going to be on par with those consoles.
Yeah, well, the website that I use when I'm comparing graphics cards is, it's called Logical Increments, and they've got like a big chart that's like, here's every graphics card you could ever be looking at and how they stack up against each other. And in a margin on the side, it says, okay, here's where this console stacks up. And the Steam Deck is just above the Xbox One S and just below the PlayStation 4 Pro.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the graphics card that it is on par with is the GTX 1050, which is old, but holding up.
Right.
Yeah. And the fact that all the games are at 720p maximum helps a lot.
Right.
The screen. Well, pretty fine. Well, like I honestly don't have any issue with the screen. The OLED screen definitely still mops the floor with it.
I mean, I don't have a Switch OLED, but this is substantially better than the base Switch.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And the size of it, like this is a beefy boy. Like it is not. It is definitely a system that holding suspended for too long is exhausting.
I would compare it to the Wii U gamepad. I think they're pretty close in size.
Yeah.
That sounds about right. That it's interesting to hear you guys make that comment about the screen, because that has not been the general perception. What I've been hearing from most people is that the screen is worse than even the base Switch.
That is absolutely not true. There is no way. Like, and I got the cheapest one. I didn't even get the one that has like the fancy glare resistant screen. There is absolutely no way that this isn't as good as the base model Switch.
Okay.
Zero chance.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was, again, I think that was a Digital Foundry or Eurogamer comment. But I could have that wrong.
But yeah, controller, a little weird. I don't love the buttons being like kind of in a line up at the top. The little mouse pad things that they have, like those are way better than I expected. I've been playing the game Hex Cells, which got recommended to me by former NWR director and person who hired me on the site, Steven Windyman Rodriguez. And Hex Cells is only playable with mouse controls. So I've been using those little touchscreen things. And they cut, like, it's not great, but it's not bad either.
I think they work best as a supplement to regular controls.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is like, it's like basically like a take on Minesweeper. So it's not like I'm like doing something highly precise, but like it works. Works way better than I expected it to, even if it's not perfect. But I do think like those being there, especially with some of the jank, it's nice to have that there. Like I, if we want to talk about Waking Dreams, I do have Dolphin on the Steam Deck, and thank you, Matt. I have a lot of things to have Waking Dreams about. I did. It was kind of a shame, and I might just have to fiddle with it a little bit. Like Metroid Prime kind of didn't run that great when I went to play it, but I think a little bit of that is also maybe Metroid Prime on GameCube has aged a little bit.
Metroid Prime specifically can have a lot of trouble with Dolphin if you don't turn on the Uber shaders.
Okay, good to know. I did play some Tony Hawk 3, and that shit is just butter. It's so awesome.
I know sometimes you can get away with, like, I know for doing, like, Wii stuff on the Xbox Series X, you can get away with messing with your clock speed a bit on the emulator, and you can kind of cheat your way through some of the performance hiccups like that, too. I think I did that for Metroid Prime as well.
The Uber shaders setting in Dolphin, I would say, fixes a lot of games because the GameCube just doesn't really have shaders in the same way modern graphics cards do. So Dolphin sometimes struggles with it on lower end hardware because you have to like generate those shaders in real time constantly. And so they eventually added a function called Uber shaders where they just said, okay, screw it. You boot the game, we make all the shaders right there. And that saves Metroid Prime, particularly.
Good to know, because that was one that I wanted to mess around with, and I was kind of a little bummed out when I started to toy around with it, and it was definitely having performance issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember specifically Metroid Prime was one of the games that they highlighted when they first made Uber shaders.
Cool. Well, I'll definitely have to mess with that, but... I mean, yeah, as both just a way to play Steam games, which there's a lot. I did not realize this, that Sonic and Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed has a Steam version.
Yep.
That I'm probably going to get.
It has more characters than the Wii U version ever got.
I was reading about it, legitimately excited. It's on my wish list. But it is also just like using the Steam store more often. It's incredible, like just how effortless it is. Like I bought a game that was on my wish list. I had a cart. The game was removed from my wish list once I bought it. Have you heard of that? Where like
it's a nice
you
feature.
Have a list of games and you buy a game off of it, and then the game that you buy goes away, as opposed to staying on your wish list and just says that you bought it.
It's also kind of weird that like when you go to open the shop, you don't have enough time to go make a sandwich.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like the shop is not a web page that is slowly loading on the shitty browser.
Well, it is a web page.
Actually, it is. It totally is.
Yeah.
We only just got to the point where the eShop would actually email me about games on my wishlist being on sale, so let's not hurry them along.
Wait, that's happening for you? Because that stopped happening for me like 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah. I get emails for them. Not every time, but I don't know if there's like a thing where they only send them out every so often or something. But I do get emails for what eShop games are that are on my wish list that are on sale.
I used to get those.
It's usually how I discover that I still have games I own on my wish list is through those emails. Have you messed with any other storefronts?
I tried to get Epic Games on it, but it was just a pain in the ass. And I realized I didn't care to play any Epic. Like, I do want to play like Solar Ash. Although, did Solar Ash get announced for Xbox?
I don't think so.
I feel like it might
I'm probably going to try to get Epic to work because I got a lot. Every single week, I just go on and redeem the free game.
Oh, so, yeah. Solar Ash is coming to Steam on December 6th.
Oh, okay. So I might just wait until December 6th. And it is coming to Xbox.
Yeah. Yeah, I was mostly curious if you had tried any like the Game Pass stuff or anything like that.
I haven't messed with the Game Pass stuff yet.
Game Pass does not work, period.
Like the Windows Store,
the Windows Store does not work at all.
Okay,
because of the way that the Xbox app installs on Windows, it's real. It's basically literally nothing installs like the Windows app does, or like the Windows Store apps do. And there's just no possible way for Proton which is like the middleware that it's using to run Windows stuff on Linux. There's just no possible way for it to be compatible. And to Microsoft's credit, they're not purposefully spurning the Steam Deck. They have a support page on their website of here's how you set up the Xbox Game Pass cloud streaming on the Steam Deck. But it's just like, there's no possible way to get it to work.
If the Steam Deck can get them to rewrite the Windows Store, it'll have all been worth it.
I think there's a non-zero chance.
That would benefit a lot more than just the Steam Deck.
EA did eventually give up and let you just have the EA pass, whatever it's called, on Steam. Like, I do that. I just have every EA game on Steam for $5 a month.
Okay, is that worth it? Because I was going to do that to mess with the trial for Madden. Because I can't tell if it's just people are bitter because Madden's going through a rough phase or if the Steam version is actually utter trash. Because it is, like, horrendously negative reviews for Madden on Steam.
If it is, that wouldn't be the first sports game that I've heard weirdly horrible things about on PC.
That's why I haven't just bought Madden, because it is the dream that I lived on 1 year for Wii U, which is, oh my God, it was incredible.
EA Play is worth it, but it's not Game Pass worth it. Like, I'm looking at it right now, and it's like, yeah, it's really cool to just like have like
all of
Mass Effect. You got Super Mega Baseball, you've got A Way Out, you've got the Madden demo, you've got all of Dragon Age, you got Dead Space, you got Jedi Fallen Order, you got a bunch of indie games, and it's really cool that you get all that for just $5 a month. But then it's also just like, it's only EA stuff, so not a lot gets added.
It's a really good bonus for Game Pass, but not much as a standalone thing.
What EA Access, which was like what EA Play was called forever ago, but that was like the best deal ever, because I think that was only like $20 a year. And the way that I would do it is that you'd get the trial for Madden. So I would like play 10 hours of Madden, and I usually just like binge on Madden at different times throughout the year. That I would typically like then wind up, they would make Madden part of the EA Access collection around the Super Bowl. And then I just play that like the previous year's Madden. And I would be spending $20 a year to just always have access to a version of Madden on my Xbox. It was incredible. But maybe I'll toss it for a month, because then I can try the trial to see if the on Steam Deck Madden is like something that I want to do. And with that, it does seem like, you know, or the Origin Store is required for some of the EA games on Steam, but it seems like on Steam Deck it runs it's pretty
painless.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't actually have to open up anything yourself. It's just going to be like, yo, we're installing Origin, and then you go, okay, and then it installs Origin, and
I am impressed with how much out of the box it is. More like, here, like, yo, just install Dolphin, man. Like, you want to do this, it's right there. I'm impressed with like how kind of approachable and easy to do some of that was.
Yeah, I've like spent my entire day trying to figure out how to like cross saves with my PC version of Dolphin, and I'm like installing like three different middleware to try to get that to work. But like, I'm a weirdo that wants to play a GameCube emulator on four different devices.
The idea of cross-saving emulators, I will admit, sounds incredible. You are not alone in that.
Yeah, that's the thing. RetroArch is on Steam and supports Steam Cloud, but not every core is available on Steam.
Yeah.
And you can go onto RetroArch's website, grab some cores, and drop them into the Steam version, which I've done. I got the N64 emulator working perfectly with cloud saves working perfectly, but I have not gotten Dolphin to work on the RetroArch build of my PC yet, and I haven't even tried it on Steam Deck yet.
Yeah, I wind up when I kind of realized that my emulation desires are just like GameCube and Wii related. I realize I'm just going to use Dolphin for now, but I'll probably mess around with something else later on.
It's the point at which, like, you can't, like, none of those games are on Switch.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, as far as having them handheld, it suddenly becomes very much worth the effort.
Well, one, I just straight up have an analog Super NT, so, like, that's, if I want to play Super Nintendo games, that's kind of solved. honestly, most of the NES games that I want to play are on Switch.
Exactly.
And I have an Analog Pocket, which now I think they added even, I know Super Nintendo games work on it now, but I think they've been slowly adding more cores to Analog Pocket.
Does it have enough buttons for Super Nintendo?
It has four face buttons and two shoulders.
Oh, okay. In my head, it was like the Game Boy setup.
So I did just have to Google something out of curiosity. Age of Calamity runs better in an emulator on Steam Deck than it does on Switch.
Yeah, that
makes sense.
I wonder like how much. Yeah, I don't know what the overhead is of a Switch emulator, because I mean it makes sense. Like it's a more powerful thing.
But I did have a fun time with my Steam Deck last night.
Oh right, so. You haven't even told the story yet. Okay.
Yeah.
Do your thing.
Yeah, so the first time that I went into, so the Steam Deck has like a desktop mode where you click on this and then it just literally turns into a Linux computer. You've got a desktop, you've got a file browser, you got all that stuff. And so I went into that desktop mode and tried to get the extra RetroArch cores working. So I went onto their website, downloaded that and all that. And then I tried to go back to the regular Steam OS mode. And then the screen went black, a mouse cursor popped up for like half a second, and then the screen went back again. And then this repeated over and over and over forever. And I tried like totally shutting off the power, like holding the power button so that it like hard shut off and everything, turn it back on. And I just ended up in that same boot loop every time, every single time. And it turned out that my Steam Deck bricked within 12 hours of only you, man. Well, not only me, because in the process of troubleshooting it, which in fairness, it was pretty easy to fix. Valve has a page on their support that's just like, yeah, here's everything you need to make a bootable USB. You go in and you reinstall Steam OS and it worked great. But what I discovered in trying to troubleshoot it and figure out what happened is that a very common problem that people keep having, which with like exactly the scenario I ended up in, was that there was a software update for the operating system that had downloaded but not installed. And if you go from desktop mode back into SteamOS while you have an update downloaded but not installed, just doesn't like that. Really, really doesn't like that. So, to any Steam Deck owners out there, if you happen to see that your Steam Deck has a pending update for the operating system, drop everything and do it.
That seems mildly inconvenient, but at least there's a way around it.
Yeah, well, so I kept Googling like a couple different things during my setup process that were mildly inconvenient. And I keep seeing like Reddit threads where someone says, yeah, it's a known bug. They said they're going to fix it. And then you see a comment replying to that from several months later, just saying they still haven't.
Yeah.
So there's I imagine Valve is just kind of overwhelmed with like getting it in people's hands still.
Yeah, I question how many of the software programmers are packing these things up to ship them out. Like, that feels like a pretty separate team.
I'm trying to be optimistic and generous.
Yeah, I get you.
Also, I literally just got a message from my old roommate saying that Valve noticed that so many people were doing custom boot videos for like something custom showing up when you turn on the Steam Deck, that they just turned it into an official feature.
I saw that.
Yeah, they should have. The problem with them making it a feature is now a few months down the line they can't come out with an upgrade that just shortens that video to improve boot speeds like Microsoft did.
Well, they can do it, because I'm seeing like people with like totally different lengths for some of these.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that now Steam can't do it. If they had locked people out of that, then they could come around months later and be like, don't worry, now it boots faster. All they did was cut a few seconds off the end of their boot logo.
I guess they still can, but
yeah,
It won't be the same.
Well, all right. I think with that, we're going to call this an episode.
Yeah. Steam Deck's pretty neat. Buy Nier.
Yes. Buy Nier on... Well, and the nice thing about Nier is it seems to run well. The comments on that have been fascinating because there's more like weird Sony fanboyism in those comments than I was expecting, given that that game has not been Sony exclusive for a long time.
Was it on
PS4. It was on PS4 for a little while before it went to other platforms.
Okay. Well, it was PC day one. I know that much because that's how I played it.
Was it? Okay. Yeah.
But PC is always like this weird demilitarized zone for the console wars.
There's been some weird Sony fanboyism in there, and I've enjoyed the people who are like complaining about the resolution on Switch, which is fascinating because it's kind of the one thing about the Switch version that you just objectively can't really complain about. And then people in the comments having to point out to those people that the PS4 version tended to actually have lower resolutions than the Switch version does.
Yep.
It's been a fascinating comment section.
And while the PS4 version did target 60 FPS, it did not hit that 60 FPS very often.
Arguably, the PS4 version could have also used a 30 FPS cap. I'd be curious if you uncapped the Switch, what the frame rate would be like and how it would compare to the PS4 version. But yeah, with that, let's end the episode. Thank you very much for listening. If you would like to write in with some questions or some video games that you would like to see adapted to movies, TV shows, animes, mangas, long-form novels, whatever you want, you can send those in to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. You can follow us at ConnectivityNWR on Twitter. You can review us if you're listening to this somewhere where that's a thing that you do. And yeah, we'll see you next time. Thank you, Neil and Matt, for joining me on this episode.
Yeah, I'll be back soon.
Well, is that a threat?
A little bit.
Okay.
I mean, we got Wind Waker soon.
Yeah.
I should play that.
Eventually.
Drag in Joe for Wind Waker, too, because he just played it.
Good. All right. Goodbye.
Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details. Hello, listener, Alex, if you decide to edit this in, we were discussing whether
texture
or not
resolutions
whether
Xenoblade
or not the
one.
Original Xenoblade on Wii actually has lower texture resolution than other Wii games, because that got brought up in the last episode. So I have very limited data set, but Shulk's sandwich at the beginning of Xenoblade, the bread on his sandwich is a 64 pixel by 64 pixel resolution texture. My random comparison point is the hunter Rundus from Metroid Prime 3. His textures are 511 by 511.
Ah.
So, yes, there is a difference in texture resolution.
That is a whole character compared to a sandwich.
Even if I grab one kind of piece...
Well, here's what I think is the most relevant.
Does Samus eat a sandwich in Metroid? Can we get that for comparison?
Well, here's a very relevant texture. This texture is Saki Amamiya from Sin and Punishment.
Where did you send it to me? Oh, there it is. That's perfect.
I thought about putting it in the chat with Alex, but he would just be confused.
Yeah, even like one chunk of Rundus's armor is still like 250 pixels by 250 pixels. Now, granted, he probably has like Metroid Prime 3 has probably way fewer textures overall than Xenoblade does.
Yeah. And I think it is something where as we were talking, like the scale of Xenoblade is very impressive for Wii. I just think the textures looked bad even at the time.
Dolphin can rip textures. I can literally just rip some textures from Xenoblade.
The ultimate point of comparison is to compare it to another open world game on similar hardware. So let's grab Morrowind. Is this the... No, that's the PC version. Okay, how about...
Do I have Xenoblade and Dolphin right now?
Alex, I hope all of this is in the episode.
I do not have Xenoblade and Dolphin. But I do have Spider-Man 2, so we can compare those textures.
That kind of works.
Oh, is that bread from... Okay, that's Grand Theft Auto 5. That's too... I need, like, old school Grand Theft Auto. There we go. Okay, yeah. Xenoblade appears to have very comparable texture resolution to the Grand Theft Auto games on PS2 and Xbox, which would be a more comparable game as far as, like, it needing to load in textures fast from memory and also having a lot of textures it needs to store. Okay.
Unless we want to really waste some time.
Should we? we should probably start the episode.